The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
Joe Biden got to work in earnest on his first full day in the Oval Office yesterday with the launch of his comprehensive COVID-19 plan. And a plus for Biden, of course, is the presence of Dr. Anthony Fauci. The respected immunologist appeared more relaxed in a press conference yesterday, having been undermined and sidelined repeatedly during Donald Trump's time in charge. This is Dr. Fauci last evening.
One of the new things in this administration is if you don't know the answer, don't guess. Just say you don't know the answer. Yeah.
You've joked a couple times today already about the difference that you feel in being kind of the spokesperson for this issue in this administration versus the previous one. Can you talk a little bit about how free, how much different? Do you feel less constrained?
No, actually, I mean, obviously, I don't want to be going back, you know, over history, but it was very clear that there were things that were said, be it regarding things like hydroxychloroquine and other things like that, that really was uncomfortable because they were not based on scientific fact. I can tell you, I take no pleasure at all in being in a situation of contradicting the president. So it was really something that you didn't feel that you could actually say something and there wouldn't be any repercussions about it. The idea that you can get up here and talk about what you know, what the evidence, what the science is, and know that's it. Let the science speak. It is somewhat of a liberating feeling.
And it was quite a press conference yesterday that had a note of levity about it, as if even the journalists asking the questions were mightily relieved to go back to business as usual. Well, my next guest is the esteemed journalist John Simpson, BBC World Affairs editor, who's watched so many inaugurations and so many transfers of power. John, good morning and welcome.
Good morning. Nice to talk to you.
Now, John, how far back do you go in terms of watching transfers of power?
Well, the first American president I reported on, not his inauguration, I have to say, but in 1963, was John F. Kennedy. And I don't think I've not reported on a single president since then. I'm just trying to think. I think I've reported on all of them, not always at the inauguration, not always even covering the election, but always with some kind of awareness of what the new president will mean for the world, which I'm supposed to, you know, kind of report on.
And we'll talk about that in a moment. One of my listeners straight away says, could you ask John if what happened in US politics in the last 3 weeks had happened in some country in Africa, would the Western world or media be calling it a peaceful transfer of power, or would we label it as a failed coup?
Well, I mean, if this happened in the Central African Republic or something, I think it would turn out rather differently and would have been used differently. You know, these things don't really, I think, carry over from one country, one society, one political system to another. And people make use of what happened in the US for their own motives. So that, for instance, China has made a great play of what happened at the Capitol now 2 weeks ago, in order to say this is precisely what happened in Hong Kong with the democracy marchers and protesters. But of course, the West chose to identify with the democracy marchers in Hong Kong. Do they like it when it happens in their own backyard? No. So, you know, we can use these things to kind of beat our own drums a bit. It wasn't an attempted coup at all. It was just a gang of of characters who went marching in on a building that was woefully unprepared for them. But there was no kind of real political background to it. Just a lot of, well, frankly, I think a lot of extremists and nutters.
Now, the difference in the way the United States will be regarded in the rest of the world. Already we've seen, you know, Macron, great to get back to normal business, welcomes from Merkel, from other leaders and other people going through the motions, the Chinese congratulating the new man and ditto the Russians. What difference does this change of administration mean for America and the world?
Oh, I think it means everything. We've had 4 years of quite extraordinary kind of chaos, really, in international affairs, with key elements of the international order being either undermined or just kind of blown up by Donald Trump. I'm thinking, obviously, of the Iran nuclear deal, of the Paris Accord, the way in which Donald Trump regarded and treated NATO, the way in which he undermined countries that you might have thought would have been most liable to be supported by him, the way in which he rather liked the company, clearly enjoyed the company of dictators. So it's a total change. It will, I think, just in future seem like 4 years aberration rather than a taste of things to come. And the world is already breathing a huge sigh of relief. I mean, even somebody like Boris Johnson in Britain, who you might have thought who did rather well in some ways under Trump, is clearly delighted to have business as usual, because it means that you can work out what America is planning to do, what it will do, how much you can trust it, how far you can trust it, all of those really important elements for any government. And now we know that we have a president who is pretty much representative of the traditional order in the States.
The prospect of a renewal of the Iranian nuclear deal, we know that Europe has stuck to it in spite of, I suppose, some provocation from the Iranians in terms of uranium enrichment and so on. There seems to be an open door to perhaps alleviate sanctions for the Iranians in exchange for going back to the standards of the deal. But the Iranians still have unfinished business, do they not, with the scientist who was killed a few weeks ago by the bomb and the killing of General Soleimani by the Americans. So, you know, that's not necessarily a straightforward negotiation.
No, it isn't. And you're absolutely right. But you also have to remember that Iran isn't one single political entity. It's kind of got two heads. It's got its political leader, who congratulated Donald Trump immediately that he won, congratulated Biden directly. Won. In fact, I think as far as I can work it out, was making a statement, a positive statement about America and the future of the nuclear deal when Trump's plane was actually in the air on the way down to Florida, and before Biden had actually been sworn in. He was saying, you know, that the treaty is still very much alive, and if America does what we want it to, then we can move forward. The other head of this weird two-headed system is the religious leader, who has many, many supporters in the more extreme versions of the military and so forth. For instance, the Islamic guards and so forth, who want revenge for the things that Trump did. But you see, it's easy for President Rouhani just simply to say that was in the past. It was done by another man. We've got a new regime in Washington, and that's what we're negotiating about. And we don't need to bother about revenge for past offences.
The question of Donald Trump's legacy, he made much of the fact that he didn't start any new wars. He withdrew troops from various places to varying degrees, possibly most damaging in Syria, leaving the Kurds in a parlous situation. Does he deserve credit, though, for not getting embroiled in another international conflict?
Well, I mean, I suppose a lot of people seem to be afraid that he was going to start a new war with Iran. I never thought that was a possibility, but a lot of people did. And I mean, strictly speaking, I suppose it was open to him to do something along those lines, but he chose not to. I feel, frankly, that what he did in Syria has extended the war. He may not have started a war, but he has helped to extend it. By withdrawing troops from Afghanistan, I think he's opened the way to a new chapter there. It'll be very difficult for President Biden to go back on that kind of thing, to send American troops into Afghanistan and Iraq for obvious reasons. It wouldn't suit the mood of the nation as it stands. Mm. So I think that a lot of these things are pure chance, whether there's a war or not. If somebody had attacked American interests really strongly, presumably President Trump would have been forced to have some kind of war at some kind of level. The fact that these things didn't happen shouldn't, I think, be ascribed to his incredible statesmanship. I think it was just a question of luck.
Now, Secretary of State Pompeo, before he left office, he was mischief-making, I suppose, deciding to designate Cuba as a state which supported terrorism, then having a go at Taiwan to make mischief with the Chinese. I mean, it's very unusual for secretaries of state outgoing to do dramatic things, shall we say, in the last days of their tenure.
It is, and who knows what Mike Pompeo's ambitions are for the future and why he should have done those things. I suppose perhaps the least you can say is that he was kind of waving the flag at people who thought like him and like President Trump about Cuba and about China. China is a really interesting and complicated case. The Chinese will be profoundly grateful that Joe Biden is in office. China really has, the present Chinese government, but also every Chinese government, has a profound dislike of uncertainty and insecurity. And of course, President Trump embodied insecurity in the way that he governed. They'll be glad that they know what they're up against. But Biden will have to follow a kind of human rights agenda with China, because he's already set out his stall in that respect. So it may be that Biden's relations with China won't be as different from Donald Trump's relations with China as we might expect with other countries.
When you talk about the unpredictability of the Trump presidency, the Washington Post fact-checkers said in his 4 years as president, he made 30,573 false or misleading claims, which is an extraordinary amount of misleading one way or the other. Some of them big lies, some of them smaller lies. And most of them perpetrated through Twitter.
Yeah. I mean, it was a government by Twitter to some extent. I personally feel it kind of propped Twitter up, because Twitter was on its way down before the Trump administration came into office, and it's done rather well. I mean, I actually retweeted that particular figure, the 30,000 lies, just simply said the Washington Post is reporting that Donald Trump told 30,000 lies during his 4 years in office. I've had, I can't remember, I think it's about 40 or 50,000 likes and, you know, something on Twitter, is that kind of level. I'm not sure I've ever had anything as great as that, but that's probably because my tweets are usually so boring. But the fact is that people like, I think, to have a kind of figure which represents the degree to which Trump lied to his own nation and to the world.
It amounts to something like 20 lies a day right throughout his presidency. The challenges in the world, obviously Joe Biden has domestic challenges with the rise of the far right, a Republican Party in its own internal crisis, and then the pandemic raging within the United States and, of course, raging throughout the world. He's not a young man, and the question is, you know, how up to the challenge he will be, because being president of the United States, with the notable exception perhaps of Ronald Reagan, is an exhausting job.
It is. I think that as with Reagan, as with one or two of the older presidents, but Reagan is the most obvious example, I think that the administration will kind of rally round Joe Biden, that his officials will make sure that he doesn't get too sort of weighed down by the daily details. You know, poor Jimmy Carter was such a control freak. I mean, I think he was an admirable president in some ways, but he was so weighed down with the detail of everything that it used to go up to him when two members of the White House staff were double booked on the tennis court at the White House, and he had to be the one that decided that, as well as, you know, kind of the Middle East and the Cold War and everything else. I think that Joe Biden is a very sensible and experienced man in office. I think you'll find that he knows the limitations of himself and of the office, and he'll make certain that things that he keeps a kind of calm overview, and will no doubt, as the 4 years progress, will no doubt give quite a lot to Kamala Harris, his vice president. But, you know, I think we may have seen the high point. I mean, it's a very dangerous thing to stick your neck out, but I mean, what the hell? I think somebody needs to say these things. I think that the notion that we've seen a high point in the divisions in America, and it's going to get worse, I'm not sure that is the case. I think you'll find that it won't. A lot of people will be really unhappy to have Joe Biden in power, but I don't think we'll see the kind of troubles in the future that we've been seeing over the last year or so.
John Simpson, BBC World Affairs editor, thank you very much for joining us on the programme today.